Good evening and welcome. It's KVC Arts, arts and entertainment in our region, as well as the people and places providing it. I'm David Fleming. The entirety of tonight's KVC Arts is in conversation with Bobby Rydell, a teen idol of the early 60s. He's still performing today and will be in the region soon. We'll have details later in the program. Now, Rydell has had an extensive music career, Sway and Volare and much more, of course. He appeared on TV and in film as well, and with one well-known example, he didn't appear on screen, but his name sure was present. Before it becomes one of those questions cut for time, I just want to go out of the gate with this one. I want to start by asking briefly about Greece. And I know this can't go far, but you had the high school named for you. Did you know about this before the play came out in 1971?
I kind of heard about it, not about the play so much, but the movie. Mm-hmm. You know, and everybody asked the question, you know, why was the high school named Rydell High? And I said, I haven't the slightest idea. It could have been Fabian High, Anka High, Presley High, Everly High. You know, they picked me. And that's absolutely tremendous, you know? I've been lucky enough, you know, Rydell High is in Greece, and then back in 1963, I was in a movie called Bye Bye Birdie with Anne Margaret, you know, and the both of them, Greece and Birdie, are classics today. All the kids across the country do it in high schools.
Oh, yeah. I grew up a theater geek. Bye Bye Birdie was one of my early shows as a teenager. I quite literally played Third Teenager on the Left and sang The Telephone Hour and all that kind of thing. So,
yeah.
That's a big one. That's a big one.
It was great. You know, it was wonderful to be able to work in a cast with Dick Van Dyke and Janet Leigh, and of course, Anne Margaret and Paul Lynde, Maureen Stapleton, my God.
Yeah.
I'm not a movie star, but to be in one particular movie, I'm so glad that I was in Birdie.
You know, so many of the teen idols ended up in movies. The managers or whatever were trying to do the triple threat routine with any of you guys. And so many ended up in some of the worst movies that were out there. I spoke with Johnny Tillotson about The Fat Spy. It's listed as among the top five worst movies out there.
I didn't even know that Johnny was in a movie, to tell you the truth.
He had a great, great story about going to meet Jane Mansfield. But he didn't realize that her parts had already been filmed, and so instead of meeting Jane Mansfield, he ended up meeting Phyllis Diller. Yeah.
Little bit of a difference.
Just slightly. But they had a wonderful friendship, though, beyond that.
That's funny.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Now, your bio states that you first took the stage as a professional drummer. Everybody's expecting me to say singer here, but a drummer at the age of 9. And this may be tied together, so I'm just lumping these together. You won a talent show on Paul Whiteman's TV Teen Club.
I think I was 10 at the time. It was called the Paul Whiteman TV Teen Club. And it gave, you know, a young talent a chance, you know, to be seen on TV and hopefully get a break somewhere. And what I did on the show, I auditioned for a guy by the name of Skipper Dawes. He was piano player and I think part producer of the show. And years ago, Sammy Davis Jr. did a record of the song Because of You, where one side he did singers doing actors and then actors doing singers on the other side. And I did the side of actors doing singers too, Because of You, like James Stewart and Jimmy Cagney and Edward G. Robinson. And I won on the show and I became a regular for about a year and a half.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and then I was involved in production numbers, you know. And then the show went off the air, and I was out of work at 11 years old.
Most people aren't even getting their first job until 15 or something like that.
Yeah, right.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, I'd never had a job in my life.
Oh, no, yeah, you went out of the gate as a performer. Oh, my gosh. Well,
yeah, really. I mean, you know, if I had any talent within me whatsoever, my dad was the first one to see it. He used to take me around to nightclubs when I was 7, 8 years old and ask the club owner, is it okay if my son gets up and does a couple impersonations and sings some songs? And I would get up there and I'd do what I did and people applauded, you know, and I said, my God, all I have to do is do this and they do that. What a wonderful feeling. Throughout, you know, my early years, my dad used to take me around to all these clubs, and it was sort of like a vaudeville for me, and it got me ready for things that were going to happen later on in my career, in my life.
You know, as a child, being around all these folks, can you think of anybody in particular that may have taught you the importance of stage presence or holding yourself like Nat King Cole, that kind of suaveness? You had to have been picking up lessons along the way there.
I had two marvelous gentlemen who prepared me for the Copacabana. Mm. One was Lou Spencer, who was an original dancer with the Dunhills, and then a man by the name of Noel Sherman, who wrote special material. Mm. And prior to going into the Copa, you know, we worked and worked and worked and worked, made sure we got ready when the time came to be ready for the Copacabana in New York City. I mean, they were just marvelous people to be able to work with. Lou Spencer did all of my staging, and Noel Sherman did all of the special material. But for some reason, I always had some kind of a stage presence and a personality on stage when I was very, very young. When I said my dad took me around, it kind of prepared me for what was going to happen. It was like my vaudeville. It really was.
Nice. That had to have been the best university that you could go to at that age. Being born to a Sapienza and a Ritterelli, was there any feedback when you changed your name to Rydell from Ritterelli?
My dad came up with that name.
Oh, it was
because I'm Italian Catholic and, you know, went to Catholic school, and the nuns, and like in grammar school, they used to call me Master Ritterelli, Master Rydelli, and they never said Ritterelli, you know. So my father came up with the name, but years ago for the press, we always said that Paul Whiteman gave me the name of Rydell, but that's not true. You know, my dad is the one who came up with Rydell.
Your dad, it stated that with your incredible success, and we're jumping over a few years here, but we'll go back to it, but your father resigned after 22 years to become your road manager. Is this correct?
Yeah, I was lucky enough to be able to take my dad out of work. He worked for a place called the Electronite Carbon Company and worked the punch press. And matter of fact, he lost his finger on the job, his middle finger on his right hand, and they gave him like $3,000. At that time, that was an enormous amount of money.
Sure.
And my father, with that money, bought me my first real set of drums, and that was William F. Ludwig, WFL. And I think I still have the receipt of the bill. I think the drum set was anywhere between $400, $500 at the time.
Oh, my gosh.
You can't even buy a cymbal for $400, $500 today. You know, and it was a marvelous set of drums. Matter of fact, it was the drum set, the same exact drum set that Ringo had, you know, with the Beatles.
Wow.
And they came out in 1964. I had my drum set in the early 50s. The same set. And I always laugh. I said, had it before you, Ringo.
Oh, yeah, I'd say.
They're kissing in Cleveland, Kansas City team. They're wailing in Wildwood, back in Waterloo. They're scooching all over, even in St. Louis. So, baby, get ready, I'm kissing you. Oh, baby, cause summertime is a kissing time, USA. So treat me right, gonna make me fight the battle of New Orleans tonight. They're kissing on beat.
Going back to your teen years, and I guess I'm looking at some unsuccessful singles. This is before you signed with Cameo. These were before you got to Kissin' Time, maybe one of your first charters?
Correct. Yeah, Kissin' Time was my first charted record, summer of 1959. But I had signed with Cameo, which was an independent label in Philadelphia. A man by the name of Bernie Lowe was the president. And I auditioned with another guy, and we did a tune called Buddies. Yada, 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 make a long story short, Bernie liked me, and he signed me to a contract with Cameo Records. And like you just said, I had three records before Kissin' Time. And what Bernie would do, because Dick Clark was in Philadelphia, so my first record that I had for them, Bernie would take the acetates, the dubs, and play them for Dick. And Dick would turn, you know, he turned the first one down, the second one down, the third one down. And, you know, after three records, I said, you know, this is really not for me. You know, I was really happy playing drums. I really enjoyed the instrument. And then all of a sudden, Bernie Lowe, Cal Mann, and Dave Apple, they were like the mainstay of Cameo. They wrote a song called Kissin' Time. And Bernie Lowe took the acetate to Dick Clark. Dick Clark dropped the needle on the dub, and he turned to Bernie, from what I understand, and Dick said to Bernie Lowe, that's a hit.
Nice.
And as they say, the rest is all history.
They're kissing and driving you to Baltimore, rocking and dancing, land and sea and shore.
Did any of those earlier singles, the quote, three unsuccessful singles, did any of these ever maybe resurface, being maybe a reorchestrated or different arrangements? Did any of these come back? Future?
Not that I know of, Dave, but there's one song that I recorded. I think it was the second song, a song called Please Don't Be Mad. And it was sort of like a doo-wop, you know, ballad thing. Boo-doo-doo-doo-doo-do, you know, that kind of stuff. And from what I understand, it's a cult record today. A lot of people, when I do my shows, they said, you know, sing Please Don't Be Mad. I never had a chart on Please Don't Be Mad. But I'm thinking of doing it because now when I look back, it wasn't a bad tune.
Yeah.
You know, it really wasn't a bad song. My God, what was I? I think I was 15 going on 16. you know, my chops at that time were very thin, you know.
Mm-hmm. You
know? Yeah. But it was a song that was, you know, related to that era.
Yes.
So I may think about putting it in the show.
It would really be a nice one. It's a tune that I'm familiar with as well, and I couldn't tell you where it is that I came across it, but it is one of those that really evokes the feeling of being around the Burn Barrel on the street corner, whether you're
absolutely
in Philly or Jersey.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
You're 1,000% correct, David.
Listening to KVC Arts on 91.9 KVCR, streaming at kvcrnews.org. I'm David Fleming. Many past shows can be found through iTunes, Spotify, and Google Play, and all past shows are at kvcrnews.org/arts. Also, you can now tell your smart speaker to play KVCR. The sole focus of tonight's KVC Arts is Bobby Rydell in Ontario Soon as part of Legends of the 60s Volume 3. More at affordablemusicproductions.com. Later in the program, we'll hear about quite a few TV appearances as well. We'll touch briefly on his autobiography and, of course, the music. Your first million seller, this was one called We Got Love. Was this from the same songwriting team that gave you Kissin'
Time?
Yeah.
Matter of fact, the majority of my records were written by Low Man and Apple. Kissin' Time, We Got Love, and after We Got Love, I was in New York City doing the Dick Clark Saturday Night Show. And on the way home, Dave Apple always had his guitar and a pipe in his mouth. And we're in the back of the limo driving back to Philadelphia after New York. He gets his guitar. He's got his pipe in his mouth. He says, when we get back home, Bobby, he says, this is your next record. And he started, you know, strumming on the guitar. And he started singing, oh, wild ones, I'm going to sing. And we got back home, recorded it, and that became, We Got Love was my second hit record, but it wasn't my first million seller. The first million seller was Wild One.
Little Bitty Girl, I believe, was the B-side. And again, I'm one of those strange ones.
Yeah, it was a double-sided hit, matter of fact. Yeah, it was a double-sided hit, but the A-side was Little Bitty Girl. And a lot of disc jockeys at the time turned the record over, and they started playing Wild One. And all of a sudden, boom, you know, it charted. And I never had a number one record, never number one, either at Billboard or in Cashbox. Went up to like 3, 2, but never number one. But Wild One was the first million seller.
Come on, Wild One, be wild about me.
It'd be easy to skip tunes here because we're talking about 60 years worth of material, but
really?
Volare, okay, this one,
yeah.
Is, of course, probably the biggest for you, or definitely amongst them, but I guess my only question about this is that with so many covers of this, beyond the Italian singers and crooners, and I mean over in Italy, Italian singers, but now in America, the Italian crooners, was there any fear that you might be looked at as a Dean Martin wannabe kind of thing? since he was probably the biggest?
Well, you know, the guy who wrote the song was a man by the name of Domenico Modugno.
Yeah.
He wrote and recorded Volare, and I had the good fortune of meeting him, back in the 60s, early 60s, at his villa in Rome. I've got wonderful pictures with him. Then, of course, Dean Martin recorded the song, and it was basically the same version that Modugno did. And I was recording in New York City because I needed a song. I was coming off a song called Swingin' School.
Yes.
And we were in New York, and we recorded an album. And Bernie Lowe didn't like the way the whole album came out, but we needed a song. And he went back and he listened to three songs that were on the album that we never released. One was Volare, one was Sway, and one was That Old Black Magic.
Huh.
So he just put the girls who are familiar with me and all of my records with the whoa, whoa, and yeah, yep. Yeah, and oh, Bobby, oh. So we put the girls on it and we released it, and boom, it became my second million seller. But my version was totally different than Modugno's and Dean Martin's.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, beyond you were the teen idol version of it, it goes beyond that. There's, of course, arrangements.
The only thing that I regretted when I was with Cameo is that we never did a big band album. We did a big band album, not like a Bobby Darin, you know, like Mac the Knife or Up a Lazy River or, you know, Clementine. But the reason that I started listening to big bands was when my dad took me to see the Benny Goodman Band.
Oh, nice.
I was 5 years old. My father loved big bands, and so he wanted to introduce me to that kind of music. Now, at 5 years old, I didn't know who the hell Benny Goodman was.
Yeah.
But my father wanted to introduce. So anyway, we go to a place called the Earl Theater in Philadelphia, a matinee performance, and it was the Benny Goodman Orchestra. And I said to my father, gee, Daddy, that's great, but there's one guy that I want to be him, Daddy. I want to be that guy. And the guy was Gene Krupa, who was playing drums for the Benny Goodman Band. And basically, that's why I became a drummer, because of Gene Krupa.
I was going to throw that name out there, that or Buddy Rich or something like that with those.
Buddy Rich and I were so tight. The fun we had together.
Really?
It was great. Oh, my God. Yeah, we were very, very close. Very close.
I understand that Buddy, this gets away from you for a bit, and I could easily be cutting this for time, but I understand that Buddy could be a nice guy, but if you came in to rehearsal without having properly shaved, I mean, what was he? He was a 5'3" guy with a black belt in judo, and he didn't mind letting you know.
Absolutely. I mean, I don't know if you've ever heard the bus tapes.
Oh, Buddy. Yes.
Oh, my God. I mean, he can call cats out, man. You know, he would say things like, excuse me, Dave. He says, I'm up here busting my balls, and you guys are just hitting clams all over that goddamn place. You cats better get this right or else you're off of my band. Damn it, you know. But with me, it was precious. The first time I met him, he was at Birdland in New York.
Cool.
And he was with a quartet. Mike Mineri on vibes, Sam Most on flute, Buddy on drums. I forget who the bass player was. And he was very close to the guy who staged my act, Lou Spencer. So we go to Birdland to see him. And Buddy introduces me from the stage. He said, this is one of the youngest cats, man, one of the only cats who can really sing and this, that, the other thing. He introduces me. I go, wow, being introduced by Buddy Rich in Birdland, a jazz club, you know. So after the set, he comes over, we sit, we talk, and now it's time for him to get back up on the set, on the bandstand. And I said, Mr. Rich, I said, can I have your autograph? And he put his right hand out, and he shook my hand. He said, this means more than an autograph, Bobby. And I said, well, thank you, Mr. Rich, you know, and I wanted his autograph so bad. But then when he recorded the first album where he had West Side Story, and he had a lot of, you know, great person, Judy Garland, Cary Grant, Dizzy Humphrey, you know, writing things on the album. And I was one of the guys who had a thing on the album. And all I remember is that Bobby Darin, God rest his soul, once wrote this to me. So in turn, I wrote it to Buddy. And I just put, dear Buddy, I wish for you what I wish for myself, your friend, Bobby Rydell. I remember that because Darren wrote that to me.
Hmm. Beautiful.
Yeah, wow. Isn't that cool?
That is completely cool. That's. I would love to have Buddy Rich's autograph, but this is a better story.
But anyway, you know, we just hung so much together that, you know, it was worth more than an autograph. You know, just being very close to him and him considering me as a dear friend.
That's truly incredible and very special, too, as a person, you know, growing up, hovering in the jazz and big band and American songbook world and the pop world, as you were. I'm David Fleming in conversation with Bobby Rydell, part of the lineup with Legends of the 60s, Volume 3. That's November 16th in Ontario, along with the Modern Gentlemen, Dodie Stevens, Brian Hyland, Paul and Paula, Jimmy Clanton, and emceed by Wink Martindale. More at affordablemusicproductions.com. You're listening to KVC Arts on 91.9 KVCR, streaming at kvcrnews.org. We mentioned Bye Bye Birdie earlier at the onset of the conversation, and I just have to note that the original stage production had no speaking role for the character of Hugo. That is what you were cast as. But
you're right. Yeah, I went to see Birdie, New York, when I found out that I got the part of Hugo Peabody. So my manager at the time, Frankie Day, and me, we go to New York and we watch. And, you know, I think it was Dick Gaudier who played Conrad Birdie and Dick Van Dyke. Yeah. And I believe Paul Lynn was in the original Broadway show as well. Now I'm sitting there and I'm looking and I say, Hugo Peabody. And nothing, you know, no singing, no dancing, not even a line. You know, I said, oh my God, you know, so. We finally get out to the West Coast. George Sidney, marvelous, marvelous director. Excuse me, I'm getting ahead of myself. I went out and screen tested with Anne for the part of Hugo Peabody, and George Sidney said, okay, thank you ever so much. 2 weeks later, I get a call from my manager saying, you got the part of Hugo Peabody. Now I'm thinking, you know, now we go see the show, excuse me. Yeah. Now we go out to California, and, you know, it's Hugo Peabody and Kim McAfee, who was Ann Margaret. And Mr. Sidney must have seen some kind of magic between Ann Margaret and myself. Every day that I went back to the studio, my script would get bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger each day, to the extent where I danced, I sang, I had more lines, you know. It was just great, you know, just wonderful. And that, I owe that to George Sidney, because he saw something, you know, that I didn't know what the hell he was thinking. Just the relationship between myself and Ann Margaret to this day, you know, has been absolutely tremendous.
And this is, as we mentioned earlier, just one of those movies. You could do nothing else, and these would be laurels to rest on for quite some time.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. I never did Grease, but I did the musical version of Tom Sawyer, where I played Tom Sawyer at Kansas City Starlight Theater. And then in Warren, Ohio, and Columbus, Ohio, there was a group of players called the Kenley Players, and it was Summer Stock. Mm-hmm. And I did West Side for 2 weeks, where I played the part of Riff.
Oh, wow, cool.
And yeah, that was one hell of an experience. That was great. And the only other thing I did years ago with James Darren, who lived right around the corner from me in South Philadelphia, his real name is Jimmy Ercolani. We did a book show called Wish You Were Here. Mm. And he played the romantic lead, and I played the social director, Itchy. You know, I've always loved, you know, legitimate stage, yet I've never had the opportunity to do Broadway, but it's something that I missed in my career. I had an opportunity to take They're Playing Our Song with Lucille Ball's daughter and the comedian, Robert Klein. And I go and I see the show, and it was really the girls' show. The only thing that Klein did was They're Playing Our Song. Uh-huh, they're playing my song. Yeah. And I said, oh, geez, I don't want to spend, you know, 2-3 years just of that. And I think that was the dumbest thing I ever did, because that was Neil Simon. you never know what could have happened from there.
Yeah. Wow.
Suppose Simon would have fell in love with me, and I could have been in one of his motion pictures. Who the hell knows, you know? But
oh my God,
that's one thing. Yeah, that's one thing that I really, really regret.
You did have various TV roles. The TV show Combat, you were just in one episode of that.
With Vic Morrow.
Yes.
Yeah, and the segment that we did was a segment called The Duel. It was just Vic Morrow, me, and a German tank. And me, I was a truck driver. Basically, I was stuck under the truck for the whole hour of the show.
Oh, no.
While Vic was fighting the German tank. But the guy who cast me was Lynn Stallmaster, who was marvelous casting director in Hollywood. And he threw a script at me. I read the script, and he goes over to Mike Nichols, and he said, Bobby Rydell just gave me one hell of a reading. And Mike Nichols hemmed and hawed, and he said, he's not what I'm looking for. The part was The Graduate.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. And so they brought in this Dustin Hoffman fellow.
Dustin Hoffman, and the rest is history.
Wow. Oh, boy. Well, there's a movie that you did get, and I'm not sure where this stands as far as how proud or not you might be. That Lady from Peking. Yeah.
I mean, it was a lot of fun. We shot it in Australia with Carl Betts, Nancy Kwan, and remember Sid Melton? He was on the Danny Thomas show. He was like the boss of the Copacabana. And it really never did anything. But there are a lot of fans out there who are aware of it, you know. And I would say, well, if you want to catch it, it's going to be on about 3:30 in the morning. You know, or it's going to be on opposite Monday Night Football.
I actually bought a copy of The Fat Spy because of the Johnny Tillotson interview that I did. And I'm willing to check out That Lady from Peking, even though it got, how shall I say it, horrible reception, both at the box office and critically.
And rightfully so.
Oh, yeah? Okay. It's not worth it?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, it wasn't. Nah, you know. I was Carl Betts' brother
okay.
in the movie. And I basically was a singer, you know, and I get involved in this tongue-in-cheek spy thing, you
nice.
Know. And
okay.
What can I tell you?
All right. We've already probably paid more attention than a lot of the public did to it.
Anytime you're ready, Bob. All right?
Ready?
Well, here's a really cool one, and that is the Jimmy Dean Show. You sang a couple of numbers, then sat in to play
right.
the drums during the song
yeah, right.
Kansas City.
Right, yeah, Jimmy was playing piano, and oh my God, who was...
Roger Miller.
Roger Miller, yeah, right.
Oh, yeah.
I forget the tune that we did, but it was a lot of fun. It was really fun, and Jimmy was such a sweetheart, man. What a nice man.
There's a portion where, with Jimmy playing piano and then Roger Miller on guitar, then you do an extensive drum solo, and then they start playing cards during your drum solo. They just started dealing out cards on top of the piano, upright grand kind of thing. So did you know what they were going to do, or at least that they were going to be clowning around in some fashion during your 16 or 32 or 128 measures?
Not really.
Okay.
But it was funny, though, wasn't it?
Yeah, totally
they
funny.
They couldn't even care less, you know, what I was playing.
Oh, yeah. No, they were having a great, great time, and that was just
yeah,
fun.
Yeah, oh, for sure.
It's Music and Conversation with Bobby Rydell for tonight's KVC Arts. I'm David Fleming. Later we'll hear about his wife and his longtime fan club president having the same name. We'll touch briefly on his autobiography as well. You know, you mentioned that you hadn't had a number one, but you had 34 top 40 hits. And so,
yeah.
And that put you, I read, somewhere in the top five artists of the era of this
correct,
song.
Dave, yeah.
So just a few years later, I'm addressing the British invasion now. I've spoken with, you know, so many folks now. I mean, we're talking about original drifters and platters, et cetera, et cetera. And different people were affected in different ways by the British invasion. Some folks, it even worked to their advantage because they just went over to England and started singing the 50s stuff there and got a big hit. But a lot of performers from the late 50s and early 60s got hit pretty hard. How did it hit
you? Well, you know, I'm in the group where, you know, everybody else was kind of hit with the British invasion, but I continued to work. You know, I did the club circuit and all of that and little concerts here and there across the country. And, yeah, to a certain degree, it did hurt. But, you know, David, there's so many peaks and valleys in this business that if you hang in there long enough, you know, something's going to happen somehow, some way. And I remember when I recorded Forget Him, I recorded in London at Pi Recording Studios. And at that time, Aunt Margaret and I, we did a command performance for the royal family.
Oh.
Bye Bye Birdie. Yeah. And then I went on tour with a young lady by the name of Helen Shapiro, who is a marvelous, marvelous singer from the UK. And one night, we're traveling on a bus, my drummer, me, Helen Shapiro, and the band. And in front of us, there's a car. And Helen Shapiro, this is 1963, Helen Shapiro says, "They're the Beatles." I looked around the bus for cockroaches. I didn't know, you know. Anyway, the bus stops. The four of them come on the bus. They knew me, and I met them, and I figured, well, they're, you know, young quartet, you know, guys who are just gigging, you know, playing club dates and weddings and, you know, whatever. And then I'm back home. This is 1964, and I'm watching Ed Sullivan. Boom. He introduces the Beatles. And I went, geez, I met those guys. You know, we didn't have the cell phones and stuff back then. I said, if I only had a picture, middle of the UK, 11 o'clock at night, you know, and these four guys come on the bus. I said, that would have been a great picture to have.
Oh, my gosh.
I didn't.
Yeah.
But, you know, like you said before, you know, yeah, it did hurt to a certain degree recording-wise, but by that time, I was more or less kind of out of it, you know, as far as my last hit was 1964, my last million seller, Forget Him. Mm-hmm. But I continued to work, you know, I continued to work. And then back in 85, my manager calls, his name was Dick Fox. He says, I got an idea to put three Italian guys together who were teenage idols, born and raised a couple of blocks away from one another in South Philadelphia.
It's the Golden Boys.
He says, how would you like to do a show with Fabian and Frankie Avalon?
Yeah, no.
I said, oh, my God. I said, Dick, that would be wonderful, you know? I mean, Fabian lived a half a block away from me on 11th Street, and Frankie lived two blocks away on 9th Street.
Oh, wow.
And Frankie and I go back. I've known Frankie since I was 10 years old, and Frankie was 12 at the time. Frankie played trumpet. I played drums, and we go around gigging, you know, doing different stuff. And so we put the show together in 85, and our first appearance was in Detroit, and it was a tremendous success. And we worked for a year and a half, 2 years. And I said to Frankie, I said, Frank, this is great, but how long is this going to last?
Hmm.
You know, really, you know, a year, 2 years, and then it's over. We're going on to 2020. We're still doing the show, and it's better now than it's ever been. And the crowds are still tremendous. That's what I said. You got the peaks, the valleys, the highs, the lows. And then all of a sudden, we get a show called The Golden Boys. That was
yes.
The name of the show, The Golden Boys. Dick Fox's Golden Boys. And then sometimes when we pull into town and you see the marquee, Dick Fox's Golden Boys, well, sometimes the G falls off. And it's Dick Fox's Olden Boys.
There's over 700 shows in this Golden Boys so far over the last 35 years. I'm so glad this is still going on. You know what? Speaking of the Beatles, this was one of your tunes. I read that Paul McCartney originally modeled She Loves You on your song, Swingin' School.
This is what I've heard. I thought it was Swinging School as well because, you know, yay, 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 I go with swing and she loves you, yeah, yeah. So I thought that's where it came from, Swinging School. But from now, from what I understand, McCartney wrote a song that goes opposite of Forget Him.
Okay,
so forget him if he doesn't love you.
Yeah.
She loves you, yeah, yeah, yeah. So I don't know which one is true,
okay.
Swing in school or forget him.
Just tell him goodbye now, forget him, and please come home to me.
One more TV show that I do have to just ask about very briefly because it was a recurring role. You had an incredible name.
Red Skelton.
Yes, indeed, yes.
I did like 10 or 12 shows with him. I did specials with him and then, of course, his regular show, think it was on every Tuesday night on CBS, the Red Skelton Hour. And when I first went, my very first show, a guy by the name of Cecil Barker, he was the producer of the Skelton Hour, he said, "I understand you do one of Red's characters." I said, "Yes, I do." He says, "Which one?" I said, "Clem Kiddiddlehopper." Now, Red is to my left rehearsing with the David Rose Orchestra, and I start doing Clem. And Red stops in the middle of whatever the heck he was rehearsing with David Rose, and he starts coming back at me. So I think after like the second or third show, they wrote in a character called Zeke Kiddiddlehopper, where I played Clem's cousin, and it was precious. It was absolutely precious. And what can I tell you about him?
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my God. You know, we were so close. He invited me out to his home in Palm Springs. Him, his wife, his daughter, three poodles. And his wife said to me, "Bobby, I can count on one hand the number of people that Red has invited out to his home."
Oh.
And, you know, he was just absolutely wonderful. I guess it was because, you know, he lost his son Richard at a very early age. Okay. I think 10 or 11, something like that, via leukemia, I believe it was. Mm-hmm. And for some reason or another, he took me under his wing, and, you know, we became very, very close, to the point where I was involved in one of his specials called Clown Alley. He had, like, all of the people who we adored, like Martha Ray and
Ooh.
Vincent Price and Little Billy Barty, and, you know, and we all played clowns. And it was, you know, just a marvelous,
wow.
marvelous special.
And David Fleming in conversation with Bobby Rydell, part of the lineup with Legends of the 60s Volume 3. That's November 16th in Ontario. More at affordablemusicproductions.com, though the rest of the lineup includes The Modern Gentleman, Dodie Stevens, Brian Hyland, Paul and Paula, Jimmy Clanton, and emceed by Wink Martindale. You're listening to KVC Arts on 91.9 KVCR, streaming at kvcrnews.org.
When the rumba rhythm starts to play, dance with me, sway with me, like the lazy ocean hugs the shore, hold me close, sway me.
There is one tune that I did not expect, and this goes into my childhood, because it was a disco re-recording, Sway, that hit the charts in 77.
Yeah, I did that, I think, for Pickwick. Yeah, the disco version of Sway is excellent.
Was it re-recorded?
Yeah, it was totally re-recorded.
Okay.
Matter of fact, the track was already laid down, and I just put my voice over it, you know, and the thing started out, boom, 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 ding, ding. And, you know, it was a great track, you know, really a great track, and I just went in and overdubbed my voice. And we also did Wild One as a disco.
Oh.
Yeah, the same date. I just put my voice over the track that they had already laid down.
Okay. Well, these
yeah.
I will totally be looking to dig these up and have them playing in the background once this airs. One of the things that you mentioned earlier about not getting to perform with a big band, I understand, though, now you've got, in 2010, there was a re-release of the album Bobby Rydell Salutes the Great Ones, coupled with Rydell at the Copa. And so this lets you really hit the Great American Songbook, the Cole Porter stuff.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Well, I, you know, ever since my dad introduced me to the Benny Goodman Band, that's all I listened to. It was big bands and the American Songbook, you know, songs that basically a lot of singers sang, but there's a lot of big band arrangements on a lot of the old American Songbook tunes. And I was a jazzer. I always listened to jazz at a very early age. So basically, that was my roots. That was really early in my life. That was my roots. Big bands, American Songbook, Sinatra. Matter of fact, I'm doing a thing next weekend. There's a disc jockey in Philadelphia by the name of Sid Mark. He's been on the air for 63 years, and it's a tribute because all he plays is Sinatra. So we're doing a show to honor his 63 years on radio, And it's with a 16-piece orchestra. It's Tommy Dreesen, who worked for Sinatra for God knows how many years. He opened for Sinatra. He's going to do like about 45 minutes. Then I'll come on with the big band, and I'll do like 45, 50 minutes. And basically, I'll do, you know, a certain amount of my tunes, like Sway and Volati and Old Black Magic. But sure, then most of it's going to be, you know, what the old man recorded it. You yeah. know, like I've Got You Under My Skin, World on a String, Ladies of Tramp, The Summer Wind, Fly Me to the Moon. So it's going to be a ball, and the band is called the City Rhythm Orchestra, and it's, you know, it's four trumpets, it's four trombones, five reeds, piano, bass, drums, rhythm guitar, and they're great. You know, all you have to do is go out there and sing, because you don't have to worry about what's going on behind you. You know, they're going to be great. So you just go out and have a ball and do basically a lot of Frank tunes.
Summer Wind, I'm glad you mentioned them. Definitely amongst my favorite Sinatra tunes, Summer Wind.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, for sure.
I can hear the sound of violins long before they begin. Let me through that solid beautiful house. Sway me good, sway me now.
There's a wonderful statement that I read at your website, and that's simply bobbyridell.com. This is not a fan site. This is you and yours, and so it's got a wonderful collection of tour dates and merchandise and all that kind of stuff.
Correct.
I have to mention cool-looking coffee mugs, Volare hats, stuff like that. In Philadelphia, you have Bobby Rydell Boulevard.
Yeah, Linda Hoffman, and for years she was my fan club president. And she started this thing. She used to go around to all, well, specifically my neighborhood, 11th and Moyamensing, and then other places. And she would go, you know, to talk to the mayor at the time, yada, yada, yada. And they got everybody to sign this petition to name the 2400 block of South 11th Street, and it is now Bobby Rydell Boulevard.
That's really, really cool. So many folks came from Philly, and not just in the world of early rock and roll and soul and stuff like that. We've got, gosh, Stanley Clark came from there as well. Speaking of jazzers.
Yeah, Philly Joe Jones.
Yep, Philly. Well,
one of
Philly.
The marvelous drummers, man, you know, who played for Miles Davis for years. Man.
Yes, indeed.
And we had Dizzy Gillespie
yep.
From Philly, you know. And then yeah, we had people like Mario Lanza. We mm-hmm. had Al Martino, Buddy Greco. My God, Jack Klugman.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, a lot of people say, how come so many people came out of South Philadelphia?
Yeah.
And I say, you know what? I think there was a water trough on 9th and Dickinson. And if you drank out of it, you became a singer. And if you put your feet in it, you became a dancer. And if you put your feet in it and you drank out of it, you became a song and dance man. I said, I don't know what the hell, why so many people came out of Philadelphia.
Wow.
So that's why I figured, it was a water trough, 9th and Dickinson.
that is beautiful, beautiful. Getting close to wrapping here, and I appreciate the time that you've given me. I really love this statement about you, and again, I believe it's at your website. It says, to peg the totality of your career as a teen idol would be similar to reading the first sentence of a book and trying to guess the ending. That's a powerful, powerful statement to me. There's so many people who start off as a child actor or a child singer, and then they have nothing left to go to but maybe 10th or 11th grade. But you continued on, and you are still continuing today, and that is a beautiful thing. Not just for us enjoying the music, but with a lot that you have gone through. And right now I'm speaking about your autobiography, Bobby Rydell, Teen Idol on the Rocks, A Tale of Second Chances.
Correct.
The title alone implies alcoholism. And you're open about this, so I'm not digging up dirt or spilling beans here on this
no,
one.
Oh, no, not at all. Not at all. It's in the book. It's for everybody to read.
Yeah. And then also with the Second Chances, 6-7 years ago, a double organ transplant.
Yeah, that was 2012. I had a double transplant. I had a new liver, new kidney put inside me. So that's, you know, Bobby Rydell, Teen Idol on the Rocks, referring to drinking, and then A Tale of Second Chances. And my second chance was to be able to get a kidney and a liver. And when I do my shows, basically, Dave, you know, I don't really dwell on it, but I just talk about the girl who was my donor. She was 21 years old, from Reading, Pennsylvania, 50 miles from Philly, was hit by a car. She saved my life and six other people as well. So I say on stage, as a favor to me, ladies and gentlemen, the next time you apply for your new driver's license, as a favor to me, please, please become an organ donor, because it truly is the gift of life. And, you know, they all applaud. You know, I say thank you for your time, and now we go on with the show.
That's quite beautiful. Say hello to Linda. We just got a bit of a back and forth with email, but, you know, I'd like to say hello to her anyway.
Yeah, she takes care of basically all my business right now. She's wonderful. We've been married 10 years now, and the funny thing about it is that when my first wife passed away back in 2003, we were married for 35 years, and all of the guys, I go out every Wednesday night when I'm home, all Italians, we go to an Italian restaurant. So one night, one girl says to me, Bobby, I met a girl for you who'd be wonderful, because they all knew that I was kind of, you know, really sad and downtrodden. And I said, really? What's her name? This girl says, Linda Hoffman. I said, that's my fan club president. She said, no, it's a different Linda Hoffman. My wife today, Linda Hoffman, has the same name of a girl who used to be my fan club president, Linda Hoffman.
If it was the fan club president, that would have been pretty creepy. She'd been waiting in the wings.
Well, yeah, you know what? The Philadelphia Inquirer. Bobby Rydell marries longtime fan club president Linda Hoffman. And we had it right, you know. No, you got to retract that, you know, because she's been married for God knows how long. A guy by the name of Jake. You know? Just said, no, please do. That's a different Linda Hoffman.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
I got to tell you this one thing.
Oh,
you
please,
know,
please.
Linda Hoffman, my wife, and the other Linda, they went to the same doctor. They went to the same dentist. They went to the same nail salon. They went to the same jewelry store. So this girl, you got to meet her, Linda Hoffman, yada, yada, yada. This girl goes to the jewelry store, and Linda, my wife, is there. And she says, I've been getting so many phone calls thinking that I'm the fan club president, Linda Hoffman. And the girl says, isn't that funny? We just talked about you. We had dinner, this, that. Make a long story short, she used to get phone calls, my wife, thinking that she was my fan club president. And they would call and they would say, do you have the new Bobby Rydell cassette? And my wife would say, no, I don't. Well, aren't you Linda Hoffman? Yes. And aren't you the fan club president of Bobby Rydell? She says, no. And isn't he dead?
Oh, no. Oh, ooh, ooh.
And didn't he record Mac the Knife? No, that was Bobby Darin.
Other Copa.
You're right.
Beautiful. Thanks for sharing that. Thanks for sharing that. That's beautiful. I'll be sharing that one. I will.
It's been Bobby Rydell for the entirety of tonight's KVC Arts. He's part of the lineup with Legends of the 60s Volume 3, that's November 16th in Ontario, along with The Modern Gentleman, Dodie Stevens, Brian Hyland, Paul and Paula, Jimmy Clanton, and emceed by Wink Martindale. More at affordablemusicproductions.com. And with that, we wrap up another edition of KVC Arts, thanking Bobby Rydell, his wife Linda, as well as Nathan Gothels of Affordable Music Productions for getting me in touch with him. Here at KVCR, thanks to Lillian Vasquez, Rick Dulock, and Shireen Awad. Music beds and themes heard on KVC Arts composed and performed by Sean Longstreet, so thanks to Sean as well. You can hear past KVC Arts programs via podcast at kvcrnews.org/arts. I'm David Fleming. Thanks especially to you for listening and for your support.